Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowling, here with my co-hostess and wonderful wife, Fiona Nowling. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson, who is also wonderful, even though we are not married. This show is a special holiday program, which is a friends and family show. First, we will be speaking with Samantha Ruggles about her life challenges and successes as a transgender woman in the Kansas City area. Samantha is a friend of ours who is the final guest in our Transgender Kaleidoscope series of 2016. Next, Fiona will lead a discussion about family and the holidays with Samantha and our other dear friends in the studio with us today, Marcia, Suzanne, Gus, and Finn. I will finish up with the community calendar update, or rather Fiona will, but first, let me take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week.
I never really thought much about gender, never really gave it much consideration. I played with individuals that were, you know, friends of mine, regardless of gender.
Now, many researchers say that most of us establish our gender identity without knowing it by age 3, and that most transgender women have some inkling of it by age 8 or 9, but that's far from being universal. Is that the case with you?
Yeah, I mean, by the time I was 8 or 9, again, I really didn't give gender much thought. I had, you know, friends that were male, friends that were female, and we did, you know, what kids do. We played, and, you know, I remember growing up, you know, whether it was role-playing and, you know, being a princess one day or a prince the next day. It just wasn't anything that I gave much thought to.
Now, you said that when you got to middle school, things started to change a little bit.
Yeah, about the time, you know, you reach puberty and I guess teams start splitting up and the boys go here and the girls go here, I was very confused. I had all my girlfriends, you know, they'd go over here and I want to go over there. And, you know, establishing gender roles was a very confusing time for me.
You also said, too, that there was an issue that many of us have gone through who were transgender women in school but not maybe even didn't know about it, weren't self-aware, and that there was a bit of hazing, a bit of bullying and machismo, I guess, from the boys.
Yeah, you know, in middle school, I still hadn't grown much. I was, you know, even as a sophomore in high school, I was 115 pounds. And up until then, I was, you know, very much, you know, just do whatever I wanted to. I was a soprano in choir. I had piano lessons and, you know, maybe somewhat of a femboy, but never really had much hazing until, you know, late middle school, early high school, and you know, the comments about being the old boy and, you know, soprano and taking piano lessons. And it, you know, it was a very tough time. And, you know, I was... Yeah, Hayes bullied, you know, and, you know, I...
Now, this was in the 1970s, correct?
This was in the 1970s, correct.
So, back then, you probably were not even aware of the existence of the word transgender or transsexual or anything about this issue.
Not anything whatsoever. My earliest thoughts of, you know, what this was for me as far as gender identity was about this, the time of, you know, middle school as well. And... Yeah, I was on a date and remember thinking that how much easier it would be in life if I would have been born a girl. And those were my earliest thoughts of something's not adding up.
So after that, were you still being bullied at that time or did you do anything to protect yourself?
Yeah, I, you know, about that time, you know, I accused of being gay or whatever, you know how kids are, you must be gay, and I knew I wasn't, I didn't have that feeling of that, but, you know, getting called names, getting called whatever, you tend to try and figure out a way to survive, and about that time is when I started getting, you know, into sports, found out I was, you know, good at baseball, good at football, and I started growing, too. Started lifting weights, started getting into fights, started backing myself up. And kind of started turning that dial towards more of what I thought being a man was. And I actually, you know, got into a lot of fights.
I had sort of this similar thing happen to me in junior high school when I started to realize my gender identity, and I fought back against it because I wasn't aware. You know, I didn't have any idea that this was okay. I didn't really know what I was inside. So I entered track. I even tried out and joined the football team and lasted for all of about... stop laughing. I was in the football team for all of about 6 weeks, and I worked out. I actually spent extra time after school trying to work out, but because I found out due to my intersex condition, I didn't really make testosterone. I never really built muscle, no matter how hard I tried. So high school, things really didn't get any better for you, and I bet you were glad to see it behind you.
Yeah, you know, high school, I was glad to see it over. Didn't necessarily get much better, but I didn't have to deal with things like you have to in high school. I started, working in the oil fields of Kansas, let my hair grow, you know, kind of a young hippie at the time. And, was just kind of trying to figure things out, and started taking night classes at the local community college, and found out I was, after a few years out of being out in high school, I was much more applying myself and actually was doing good in school, and decided to quit working and go to college.
Now, quite a lot of us have this slumbering of our gender identity for a while. Part of it is because we force ourselves to try to keep it down because we feel like it's something that has to be hidden, that our gender is wrong and thus we are wrong. And I imagine you had some of that going on at the same time.
I did, and I applied myself in school and graduated with honors and went to work, got a job, and I really became a workaholic. I put all of my mental efforts, all of my social efforts, all of my time into working, and became somewhat of a workaholic, as well as somewhat of an alcoholic as well, and burying all of that angst or whatever you want to call it.
Now, and you got a degree in business administration, if I recall correctly.
Correct. Early on, I was a journalism major, and about halfway through, I switched majors and got a degree in business administration.
Now, you told me about an epiphany that you had in New Orleans, of all places, in 1998 on a business trip. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Business trip, sales meeting in New Orleans, and I got there early on a Sunday and thought, I've got, all day to kill and take in the sights and sounds of New Orleans, and thought I would take a stroll down Bourbon Street. And, I stopped at every shop, every bar, every place there was. And as I was walking by one place, I saw a sign that said, "Come on in, a place where boys will be girls." I thought, well, that's interesting. And, I went in, and, it was a...
How could you resist?
you're in New Orleans, you want to take it, you're visiting. So I went in, and, they had a stage. It was an assortment of drag shows as well as women performers, but it was different than drag. It wasn't, it was actually transgender women. And, kind of had that in the back of my mind for a long time. And, not necessarily attracted to the women, but it got me thinking that there was something I wanted to learn about that. And that was probably when things started researching a little bit more. And realized after, a while that's kind of me.
And we, as you know, like I do, that, a lot of the young ones today don't realize that they can, it's so easy for them to take out their iPhone and tap in, "I feel like a boy, what's wrong with me?" or "I feel like a girl, what's wrong with me?" and get millions of websites of information. But the 90s, you just couldn't find anything.
Couldn't find anything. And, again, I buried it, went back to work. And tell you a quick story about work. I'm in an interview, not an interview, review, an annual review. This would have been 99, 2000, 2001. I can't remember the exact time. But I got a good review, and my manager at the time said, I do want to give you some advice. I don't know how to frame this, but I think you would be better off if you could get in touch with your feminine side. And I'm sitting there going, if you only knew.
Wow, it's like you're living in my head, rent-free.
Exactly. And on that same line, a year or so later, I had another interview with someone that I was actually interviewed for a senior management position, and I didn't get the job. Didn't get the promotion, and the person that interviewed me said that, you know, one of the reasons why was there was something about me, and they couldn't quite put their finger on it, but it was like I was hiding something, like I wasn't being truly authentic.
You know, this is one thing that struck me when we talked earlier this week, is so many parts of your story sound very similar to mine, and, you know, that... After my transition at work, several times other women came into my office and shut the door, and they would tell me that they had always liked me, they'd respected me, but they never wanted to be close to me. They never wanted to be my friend because there was something off about me. And as one of them told me later on, she said, I realize now what it was. You were a girl playing dress up as a boy.
Exactly. It's a very good analogy.
And I know that Una directed all of her efforts into work, and when that didn't help her, she also self-medicated and became an alcoholic. Did you have any strategies like that?
Yeah. You know, when you spend all your time at work, at the end of the day, how do you relax? And I self-medicated with alcohol, yeah. And, you know, that continued. You know, it was kind of a, you know, I was a functioning alcoholic. You know, I learned how to.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't the social alcohol, you know, social drinking that I had any issues with. It's when you were alone at night.
Yes. And that's slightly better than it being before work in the morning when you've got to drive, but have to face up to going out as a guy again.
Exactly.
That was, yeah, I've fought that demon as well, I'm afraid. There was another part about your experience that was also very similar to what I went through, where you said, talked about having to sort of start your coming out process online. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Now, you know, fast forward a little bit, 2008, 2009, I'd started my own business, kind of an IT consulting that really turned into more of a business development freelance. And, you know, I had more time to be online and found a lot of information about what transgender is and, you know, the different identities. And chat room or a forum somewhere, someone said, you know, what you ought to try is get on Facebook and create a femme persona, which I did in, you know, 2010.
That's so similar to what, when I'm in my second diagnosis as being transgender in 99, my counselor said, get on this thing called the internet and create a feminine persona. I said, don't lie about your anatomy and don't lie, but just write from your heart and speak from your heart.
Interesting.
Imagine you did the same thing.
I did. And what's also interesting, I had no social media at that point in time. Had no, you know, no Facebook account, no anything other than, I take that back, I did have LinkedIn, you know, again, that business persona that I was promoting, but I, you know, had no Facebook friends. These were all just business connections.
So then there was an epiphany that happened to you in, I think you said September 2014, that caused you to come out. Can you talk any about that?
Yeah. In 2014, we'd gotten our house for sale and ready for sale, and we're talking about, well, what's, you know, if we do sell it, what's our next step? And at that point in time, I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to, you know, do all of this changes in our life and come out and things fall apart. And I just couldn't, and this is May of 2014, and so things got worse. You know, the summer... just got so much worse. I buried so much more. I worked so much harder. I traveled so much more, drank so much more. And then on September 19th of 2014, was out having some drinks by myself, on a Friday night, which is one of those dates that I remember because it's International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Left the bar in Shawnee and driving home, I got a DUI. And
On Talk Like a Pirate Day?
On
Say
Talk
It Ain't
like
So.
A pirate day. two blocks from my home, and called Julie, said, come get me. And she came and got me. And by now, it's, 2 a.m. in the morning. And on the way back home, I said, Julie, I have something I want to tell you that will change our lives forever. And, immediately she was like, what? And that's when I told her that I was a transgender woman. I don't remember the exact words I used, but it was something along the lines of, I have a female brain, a female heart, a female soul inside the man of a body, inside a male body.
After that, things got a little bit worse before they got better. You ended up, you said it was responsible for you ultimately losing your career. Is that true?
Well, at that time, I would have been 56, had a good job, but I did start to transition. Shortly after coming out, I started therapy. Three, 4 months after starting therapy, I did start on hormones and letting my hair grow, getting my ears pierced, taking those, I guess, baby steps. And I don't know that I was let go because I was transitioning, but certainly a lot of my goals, a lot of my expression, a lot of my thoughts about work were changing. I've said this before, that a lot transitions when you are a mature trans woman. And so my career transitioned. And about that same time, I shared with my kids. And, during that period of time when you are transitioning and you're spending, maybe your evenings or your weekends as your authentic self, but then Monday morning rolls around and you got to put the suit back on or a tie or a jacket and present in your unauthentic persona, can be very hard.
Yes, it is.
I actually found that my dysphoria got a little worse.
Yes. What makes you happy right now? I know you're involved in several things in that, not just for yourself, but on behalf of the community. For one thing, the Equal Trans Support Group and your work at Lighthouse. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. As part of my, what I call my career transition, I wanted to find my passion. And, I often say that I'm transitioning from a career of earning to a vocation of helping. And as part of that, I started going to the Equal Trans Support Group at the Like Me Lighthouse. So now we're looking at, early 2015. And went to my first Pride event. And Like Me Lighthouse had a booth, and I signed up as a volunteer, started volunteering. And about September, I was asked to join the administration of the Equal Trans Support Group. And about that same time, that's about when I was let go from my job. Also about that same time, my daughter had a grandchild, and which was really kind of good timing. It allowed me to, I was a primary caregiver for probably the first 6 months of my grandson's life. As my daughter was finishing up school. So it allowed me to be motherly, which was very good for me. Fast forward into 2016, again, I went on a few interviews as my male persona, thinking that I would find the job to transition on, and that just did not work for me at all. I remember one time putting on a tie and going into this interview, and I got in the elevator after the interview, and I just broke down and cried. I ripped that tie off, and I pretty much was out of that suit within moments of being home.
I understand.
And that was the last time I ever did that.
Samantha, sorry. I keep thinking, every time I hear the word Samantha, I think of Bewitched and this show.
Right.
I want to thank you very much, and we want you to stick around for the second half of our show here on Trans Talk. I want to thank you very much for talking with us, and we'll be seeing you here after a short musical break.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Trans Talk. That song you just heard on here was called Candy Says, and it was performed by the Velvet Underground, recorded in 1968, but I think it was released in 1969. It is a song about Candy Darling, one of Andy Warhol's transgender superstars of the era, and I thought was kind of appropriate to have on our program today.
And this is Fiona. The holidays can be an incredibly hard time for many people, either because of issues with family or money or having lost their career or livelihood. That is even more the case in the transgender community, especially when many transgender persons are rejected by all or some of their family when they transition, which can lead to them being barred from family events for unity or having to do stressful balancing acts. Last year, we spoke to our friend Marcia about the holiday season ahead and how her transition had affected her life, family, and the holidays she used to celebrate as a family time. This year, we brought Marcia back to talk about the holidays, but also some other friends we have had on before. We have Samantha from the first half of our show, retired Colonel Suzanne Wheeler, who we spoke with last December about transgender military issues, Gus, a local transgender man and leader of several support groups, and a new guest, Finn, who is our youngest guest today. So Marcia, Suzanne, Gus, and Finn, welcome to Trans Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marcia, we've spoken with you before about your transition in detail in October 2015, and your life, like many of ours, has been through constant change since then. Last year, your family situation was very mixed, and you were not really looking forward to the holidays. How did the holidays turn out for you last year?
It was difficult, and I was about what I expected it to be. It was a stressful time, but I did have good friends and good support structure, which was made it able for me to make it through that particular holiday season.
Now, I know you've been through some major changes in your life this year. You've got a relationship now and a new job, and you're significantly involved in volunteer efforts. Can you tell us about all of those things?
Well, first of all, I'm a board member of KCAVP, have been for a while. I also work with Planned Parenthood as a volunteer coordinator. We coordinate the volunteer efforts of Planned Parenthood in our affiliate area. And I am just recently engaged to this young lady on my right.
Which, for those of you that can't see our studio, that's Suzanne. And she's blushing and giggling.
They both have nice rings that they've been showing us here.
You got to show the rings off.
The bling.
Yes, but it's kind of hard to do that on the radio. Now, how has your relationship with your family changed since last year?
It has steadily improved. In fact, last night I received an early Christmas present when four of my six grandchildren visited the house with their parents. It's the first time I've seen those grandchildren in 2.5 years. It was unexpected, shocking in a great way, and made my holiday season. And I've become closer with three of my children, my daughters, still estranged from my son, and we're not seeing any inroads being made in that particular front, but I've become closer with my daughters, and now I was able to spend the evening last night playing various games with my granddaughters. They're in their 9, 10, 12 range, and so it was a very entertaining evening.
I'm so happy for you.
See, this is why I said you need to learn Pokemon Go, because all the kids are doing that.
I'll take your word for it.
I think that's the best answer you can make to that. Okay, Suzanne, Marcia may have stolen some of your news, but tell us how your full coming out has gone.
My full coming out has gone great, really. It was very difficult at first as far as my family goes. I lost a marriage in it. I have four children. My oldest daughter was the first to come around and bring me back into her life and come into my life. And we have become very close. She's extremely busy, but she does a great job. And her fiance is very close to us too. I think her fiance likes Marcia a lot better than me, but that's the point.
Can you blame him?
Yeah. And then my oldest son, I'm estranged from him. He pretty much about this time last year completely stopped all conversation and discussion with me. Right after coming out to my kids in July of 2014, before he left for school, he wanted to meet me as the authentic me. And when he did, that meeting lasted all of about 4 minutes, and he was back in the car driving back to Wichita, and heard very little from him since. My youngest daughter dropped off for a while, explained to me that she had to go through grieving because she felt like her father had died, and she needed to get to a place where she could meet Suzanne and learn who she was. And she's now there. She comes up, spends time with us. We take her down to the lake. And then my youngest son has really been the best. He's 13. He is, you know, I don't care what you're like on the outside, you're still my dad. We still have a father-son relationship. And even though some of the roles and the boundaries have changed a little bit, that's how he likes to frame it, so that's how we keep it. And it's been very good with them. And we actually had my two youngest up for the first time over the Thanksgiving holidays. And then we, last Sunday, had Christmas with my oldest daughter and my two youngest. So it was fantastic.
Yes, youngest son sounds very wise for 13.
He's enormously wise. He's he's got the biggest heart of any 13-year-old I've ever met.
I'm so glad that most of your family has responded so well to you and you've had holidays with them.
Yes, it's a little odd, and there's a bittersweet feeling. In my former life, we used to have very large family get-togethers. Those still go on, and you're eliminated out of those, it seems like. But you still get the relationships. It's just in a different way, and you have to modify it. It's almost like any family that goes through a divorce or any major transition like that.
What would you recommend to other people that have gone through losses like you have to help them reestablish relationships with family?
Give it time. It takes time, and people have to work through this process on their own. It's cliche, and because you do hear it a lot, that we, we get so many years to transition and come to terms with who we are. They need an amount of time to come to terms with who we are as well. And as that happens, you'll find you will find a new relationship on the other side. Things will be different, but a lot of times they're stronger and better.
And you have to remember, you never want to give up on them. Always be available. Always be there. And you never know when the breakthrough is going to come if you've lost family during your transition.
And always try to do your best to maintain contact. Even like my son, I still send him texts, and I know he gets them. And I wrote him a 3-page letter. You know, just basically telling him how much I love him and how proud I am of all the achievements that he's making. So even if I'm not there, I want him to know that I'm there for him.
Thank you. Now, Finn, you're the youngest person here, so how did your transition go, and how did that affect your relationship with your family?
Well, I was actually forced to come out of the closet by my parents when I was 14 years old. There was some stuff on Facebook that had confused them, and they kind of just locked me in their room and said I couldn't go to sleep until I told them what was going on. So, and then I was like, okay, I'll sleep in here. And then they're like, okay, well, we'll take your laptop away until you tell us. So I told them that at the time I identified as a gay trans male. And they were both kind of weird at first. I wasn't the first trans guy in the family, so they had a little bit of background knowledge, which was good. But they still were very frazzled about it. And it took them, I mean, it's taken them about almost 4 years now to get them almost to a point where I'm happy with how they feel about me. Around the holidays that same year, it was like the first time I saw my chosen name then on like the wrapping and the presents. And that was all nice, you know, because at home my parents knew and it was like, oh, it felt validating. But then on New Year's Day, I had to go to my grandmother's to unwrap presents, and then you see the birth name again and it's like instant dysphoria. And, you know, it's never good to be around my dad's side of the family. They're very, they like to block it all out and pretend it's not happening. So even if you do sit down and have the conversation with them of, these are my pronouns, this is my name, and this is who I am, they're never going to come to the realization and understand your new identity. They'll just block it out. So that's kind of where my dad's side of the family is.
That's going to make holiday times really hard for you.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, I went to my grandmother's on Thursday to help her with wrapping her presents, like I do every year. She gives me, like, $10 to wrap her presents, and I sleep over, and she feeds me. It's a pretty good deal. We were watching some Christmas specials, and she said something about how she worries about my dad when he goes out of town on international events because of terrorist acts, and that spawned a 3-hour political debate that spanned over LGBT issues to race issues to ISIS and Hillary, and it was just like, it was hard to like love my grandmother after hearing her support Trump and support all of these different things that are kind of part of my identity in supporting a political figure who's looking to take my rights away and looking to take my freedoms away. So, and I have to go back there on New Year's Day to do Christmas with them, and it just doesn't feel very festive. I don't feel like it's the holidays when I have to be in an environment like that.
That's an excellent point. It's not just the acceptance of your gender identity, but it's all the attendant socio-political biases that you've got to break down as well within your family.
Yeah.
And some of those are easier as an adult because you'll have control of your own time and you'll have a vehicle, and if it gets too uncomfortable, you can just say, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
You have a planned exit strategy. But when you're dependent on your family, your parents, you don't have that freedom.
Yeah, and of course they want to stay and talk to the family and everything, and they feel like they have to make an appearance. So when I'm like, let's go now, they don't really understand that I kind of need to get away. They just think I want to get away, when it's more of like a physical need to separate myself from the situation.
Yeah, I think we can all understand that with family. And I'm going to move on to Gus now. And I know you've had a bit more success with your family relationships as your transition. So can you tell us a little about that?
Yes and no, actually. this recent election has put some strain on some family relationships that I had. I was, I guess, in a state of complacency. I felt like things were fine, that they all grasped it, they understood who I was and that kind of thing. But then, you know, the election happens and, you know, suddenly they're like, oh, we got to build walls and we got to lock up the bathrooms and we got all of this stuff. And I'm like, you're saying that to my face? Like, seriously? Who are you people? It just sort of feels like I'd lied to myself more than they had lied to me. Like I had sort of, I'd convinced myself that things were better with them than they were. So I removed them all from my Facebook, and my sister like a week ago sends me a message and is like, did you remove me from Facebook? Did I do something? I'm like, that happened like the week of the election. You're just now noticing. Like, you didn't even notice I was gone. Like, and you're trying to put this guilt trip on me. So, you know, like your political feelings and the things that you're prioritizing have more to do with your money and more to do with your privilege and your status in the world than my safety and my existence. And that's really hard to stomach from people that, you know, you thought you had just this unconditional love and acceptance from. So, you know, the holidays are a little weird this year. I've taken a big step back from almost everybody. I've got one sister. In fact, we had been kind of estranged until Pokemon Go, as a matter of fact. So we kind of bonded over that. And, you know, she said, you know, I noticed that you've kind of been keeping to yourself. Are you okay? And so the checking in was really appreciated. You know, it was very it was kind of the thing that was needed. And so we've kind of bonded over, you know, like sort of separating ourselves from kind of the rest of the family. Like, we have a family of crazies. We have lots and lots of crazies. I think everybody does, but I'm just sort of realizing it again. And it sort of reminds me of, you know, when I was like Finn's age and sort of dealing with all of this stuff in the beginning and realizing like, oh, there's something weird going on with me. There's something just deeper than just being attracted to girls. Like, there's something really, I don't even fit in with other people that are attracted to girls. Like, what's going on with me? And so, you know, and then that initial estrangement from my family that happened around that time, like, it's like I'm reliving it. Like, it's like life has gone kind of full circle.
Thank you for that. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about all the issues that people are going to have with their families, seeing them at Christmas again and knowing how they voted.
And I'm still thinking about Pokemon Go. We encourage anyone that wants to stop by KKFI because we are a Pokestop.
Not that she's advertising or doing any calls to actions there.
Oops.
Now, Samantha,
yeah.
We talked to you earlier, but what are you doing for the holidays this year?
Well, it's been pretty busy up until early this month when, as part of other things that I do, I'm involved with Transfinity KC, which is a transgender chorus, and we had a concert on December 10th. So since that time, my life has slowed down a little bit, and it's allowed me to, you know, make plans for Christmas and get my mind around a new Christmas season for me and my family. This is the first Christmas season that, you know, I've been, you know, fully out and full-time trans woman, so it's a little different. It's also different in that you know, my daughter doesn't no longer lives with us. So instead of Christmas Day and Christmas morning, we're having Christmas Eve events, and it's actually, although it's different, it's actually better. It's a Christmas for all of us. That although it is different and it's challenging for me, it's also a good time to grow as a family.
Following on from growing as a family, I'm going to give some information. There are organizations out there for anyone who's got issues over the holidays. There's the Trans Lifeline on 877-565-8860. Or the Trevor Lifeline for LGBT youth on 866-488-7386. But there are also therapists recommend a five-step way of dealing with difficult situations for the holidays, including with your family. The first step is to try and be confident and happy with who you are and be ready to correct people a lot and to work with people, which Finn already has far too much experience of. Maybe you need to increase the rate that you charge for wrapping presents next year. The third step is to take care of your mental health. Fourth one is to have an exit plan. So you may need to actually brief your family beforehand that when you say you need to go, you really, really need to go. It's not just a knee-jerk reaction. And then the fifth step is spend the holiday with your chosen family if you can. That may not be your birth family, but it may be friends that you've made during your transition and your journey.
And what's funny, as I was listening here to your interview with our five wonderful guests, is I heard all five of these points expressed in their advice that they gave for getting through the holidays. I just thought that was uncanny.
And I want to quickly ask if any of you have any additional suggestions to make or any extra comments on those ideas and how to handle the holidays.
I think the Fiona, the chosen family, is very, very important. Last year was a very difficult Christmas for both Marcia and I. And last Christmas, we had a friend come in from the West Coast, and we had several friends come in. And it just really makes the entire difference to share, not in the sadness of not being there with your genetic family, but being there with a new family of friends that you can celebrate. It's so amazing. And it shows you that you have a much larger family than what you really think you do.
Yes, it's important to step out and connect. Don't sit in your dark closeted room. Take the opportunity to step out and connect with members of our community and celebrate the holidays together. Because remember, as you step out and connect, you're helping somebody else also.
Thank you, Samantha, Marcia, Suzanne, Gus, and Finn, all of you, for being here and sharing your Christmas Eve with us.
Yes, thank you so much. I know it's hard to get people to come here on Christmas Eve, and we're very grateful that all of you volunteered your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
And now I'm going to give you the Kansas City Community Calendar for the coming month. And every month I lead the Kansas City SOFA group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons. We meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month. And in January, our meetings will be 6:30 on the 4th in study room 115 at Leawood Pioneer Library. And same time and place, but study room 116 on the 18th. For driving directions and other SOFA information, you can visit transitcity.org/SOFA. And that's with two Fs. There is an M2F support group at the Transgender Institute on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. That's at 8080 Ward Parkway, Kansas City, Missouri. There's also an F2M support group, but the dates and times may be changing, so if you're interested, contact the Institute on 816-305-0943. And on January 15th, the Transfinity KC Chorus will be singing at the HRC Kansas City Battle of the Bands in the evening. We're not competing, but we're entertainment while they're tallying the votes. So if you want to see that, that's at Kansas Hall, 7300 West 119th Street, Overland Park, Kansas. The full battle runs from 2 p.m. till 8 p.m. A transgender support group organized by Dr. Hitt and Sony will run the first and third Saturday of the month from 1 to 2:30 p.m. The group is open to all transgender persons, allies, and family members, and it's at 8301 State Line Road, Kansas City, Missouri. Passage's LGBTQ Youth Center meets at Trinity United Methodist Church every Wednesday from 5:30 to 9 p.m. for ages 14 to 20. Passages is a long-running Kansas City Youth Center dedicated to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning youth, and straight allies, and they meet at 620 East Armour Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. And we're running short on time, so you'll be able to find the rest of the community calendar out on facebook.com/10thvoice. And I would like to thank you all for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Samantha, Gus, Finn, Marcia, and Suzanne, our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson, and last but not least, my co-hostess, Una Nowling, my cute wife.
Thank you very much.
It was PG. And remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Ebony Johnson. And be sure to join the 10th Voice next weekend as well, Saturday at 1 p.m., for more discussion of LGBT topics and events which shape our lives and our world. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.